Blog Talk Radio.
Because he lied to the FBI.
And that was during the transition period, which was basically unlawful. You can't be serving, making policy when the president is in the seat. So he done this based in December, and you don't take the officially become the president until January the 20th. So he lied. He hadn't talked to no one in Russia, or was part of Russia Gate, you might say. But it was during the transition period. And the plea deal is one count, basically, at the moment. But obviously, when you do what he did, you know, he can't have an attorney. He can be pardoned if it don't go to, if he didn't do anything within the state. I think they got some stuff on him into the state now where he cannot be pardoned by the president. So it's a different ball game than people think it is. His plea deal is just on lies at the moment. And like I say, during the transition period, they should be about trying to make policy. Of course, you're transferring, he's transferring the operating of the presidency to another president. So you can't do that until you get sworn in and all this type. This was done prior. I think he wanted to save his son. He wanted to save, I think, his family to a certain extent. He's looking at basically a basic 20 years. And the plea deal will probably do a max of 5 years. If you don't lie anymore. So it must have been a pretty good deal. For him to do this. Now, I believe that all this is going to lead to the White House. He's getting into the White House orbit. They were caught, the White House was caught off guard by Flynn's remarks, without a doubt. The president said he fired General Flynn because he lied to the vice president. Wait a minute. You're talking to a liar from the beginning, Donald Trump, a pathological liar. So that's a lie. He fired him because he saw what was going on out there. He had to, because Congress and the committees and the general counsel saw what was going on. He had to do that. He had no choice to try to keep himself from being implicated to a certain extent at that particular moment. I think he's going to be implicated because I don't believe not in no administration that your national security advisor is not basically interacting with the president at no given time. So for President Trump to say he didn't know anything about this or this or that, that's another lie. So we got a lying president. We got a lying administration from Sessions and on. We've got a bunch of lying people, you know, economic, by all these guys are big liars. So we're dealing with a lying administration. This guy's a born liar. Been lying all his life. As I get into the Trump watch, I will give you some more evidence of that. But that was the biggest breaking news. When General Flynn, the three-star general, he lied to the FBI up on the oath. And now the penalty for this could be 20 years, can be up to 80 years. If you get into money laundering, you get into other things we know that are there. And we'll get into that later on. But right now, that's the breaking news, that this caught the White House by surprise. They had no idea. But like I said, he made a deal. He's going to fully cooperate. He's going to give them names. And they're going to be up the food chain. And it might end up at probably Donald Trump.
Now, what do you make of the role of Jerry Christian? He seemed not to be talking too much. What do you make of his role,
well,
and how deep do you think this investigation goes as we talk about the so-called Russian gate?
Well, he's going to be in the orbit because, again, I think Flynn implicated him that he told him. He also, Kutcher told Jared Kissinger, he told, you know, his father-in-law to fire Comey, the FBI person. So that's going to be a problem. Yeah, Jared Kissinger is going to be a huge problem. There's no state things against him. State of New York, he got that building up there, 666. He's just got a blown, what they call a balloon payment. He's got to get money for that. I think it's $1 or $2 billion he got to get that squared away. So that's where the laundry and the money laundry going to come in at. So he's the next guy on that pole. He is in it pretty deep. I think he's number two at the moment. From this food chain, he's number two. Number three will probably be Donald Trump Jr. Probably going to be Manifold. He's going to be a big part of this. So actually, his trial is not until May. So Manifold looking at 80 years. 80 years. Why is trial not until May? To get him kind of think about it. The latest news, they just put General Flynn, he's up under, right now, on a protection program, you might say, on a protection program. So right now he's got security around him at the moment. I think he should keep it there because, again, this is getting something out of whack now. This is getting out of hand now. He's on protective custody. That's the latest I've heard this morning. I got a friend of mine calling from Washington, D.C., so he's under protective custody. So this is raising some, this is causing some type of panic.
You know, Emmanuel, under breaking news, I often call this particular issue the Robin Hood effects. Recently, there have been a passing by both houses. The tax reform bill. What impact do you think this may have on the community, and where are we really at in terms of that really passing the final step before it comes law?
Well, they've got to go to Donald Trump's desk. Are they trying to iron out some finer details? Well, this is the worst, most horrific tax reform ever. And because, again, you have to get the money from somewhere. So they're going to go to the entitlement programs to do that. I mean, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, because that's where an abundance of money is, okay? But as long as these disasters can call this $350 billion per month budget to go up, $100 billion right now to take care of what's happened with the hurricanes. So now you have actually, you know, another $100 billion you've added to this. We're not talking about, you know, world crisis and things happen sometime in the world. We sort of help them out. So this is what gold in our foreign aid. So this could be some huge numbers. And like I said, we're in a war still with ISIS. We're still paying soldiers. I've still got the military. We've got all this money. Military is about $700 billion per year. Social Security, I think, is the most expensive, about $900 billion. But it's our money. We put money in Social Security. It's not like they're giving us something. They try to tell you that. But that's what most of the money is, Social Security. About $37 trillion, so they got plenty there. So that's where they're going to probably get the money. If you see, we don't have what the percentage is going to be on Social Security, what it's going to be on, you know, Medicare. We have no idea at the moment. But it's coming. It's got to come from entitlement programs. So you're going to see a lot of things cut. You know, it's going to be not, you got to cut from a lot of areas because you can't get money from one place. What's going to be the juggernaut? The juggernaut is going to probably be Social Security. Medicare will be next. And, of course, the next thing will you know, be Medicaid. The hospital, of course, like I say, is number two. So it's a lot involved. You can't put a, you know, put a number on that. But like I said, that's where it's coming from. It's called, it's coming from the entitlement programs.
Can we say in general?
The rich are going to get richer. They like I said again, they think it's going to be a trickle-down effect of economics. It has never trickled down. And again, you look at the stock market. It's going to go up because certain people are putting money in there, but not going up for the middle class and the poor class, and not going up in the people in poverty. This is not for them. This is capitalism, people, at its best. They're going to make sure they have and they have nots. And you got a lot. You got 80% of have nots. I mean, that means from paycheck to paycheck, that's popping into some. They have nots. And that's what you have. So understand the numbers. Rhetoric is fine, but numbers are the true amplifier. It's the true, it's things you have to understand. Tell me, give me change for a dollar. You can't give me 75 cents. That's all I got, and I'm short of a quarter. But that's where we are. I gave you all the change I got. You got plenty of rhetoric to say why I didn't get you know, my full change of a dollar. You have plenty of rhetoric. I gave you all I got. There are probably 8 or 9 scenarios you can say why, you know, but you have change for a dollar? I got some change. I can't give you all the dollar, but I got some change. What you want to do? Want to put it into a parking meter, do this or that? Or, well, I can give you 75 cents of your dollar. This is what this is all about. They need a dollar, and they got 75 cents. Well, we got to get a full change. We got to get that quarter from somewhere. And this is what's going to happen. About $1.4 trillion on board, I think it's more than that, that we're going to add to the debt. And we might shut the government down. December the 8th, we got to start paying people. People calling for their debt, especially China. And China cut us off. We in bad shape. China supplies us by almost 80, or the Asian community, supply with 80% of our products. When he went over to Asia, we were talking about trade. The thing was trade. To get the cost down, get the tariffs down. This is what we need. We got to get through. You can buy stuff 80% off and buy things 70% off. You can't get that label, that same labor cost here. It doesn't work that way. They're making material for houses now, automobiles, appliances. These are our big ticket items. That's who make these items. Malaysia makes most of the stuff for Samsung, the appliances, Frigidaire, wash machines. Malaysia make that at 45 cents an hour, people. This is what's going on. Understand the numbers where things are coming from. Because of cheap labor. Capitalism do not exist without cheap labor. They're one of the components. It's cheap labor. And you don't have cheap labor here. Hope I answered your question there, Coach.
Let's continue then the saga of the continuation of the sex scandals. Recently there has been some new names added to the list. We have John Conyers, the congressman, and we have Matt Leiner, the host on today's show. What you make up these new names and this whole issue of this continuation of people being exposed or being alleged sex harassers, and they are being fired from their jobs. What you make of this, at least this past week, of these new players on the block?
Well, we're talking about sexual harassment, and this isn't going on. You know, this is not nothing new. Women just didn't come out and talk about it, but like the guys are stepping down, based with allegations. Must be true, but they're stepping down. Matt Lowry makes about $25 million per year. He's the highest paid guy, of course, on television. He generates about $500 million, of course, for the program. So, again, it's hard to get rid of these type of people. But again, they couldn't tolerate it anymore because, again, they don't want to get sued for more money. He just stepped down because of that. John Conyers, he's a ranking Democratic congressman. I think he started the Black Caucus, a lot of things he has done. He's been there for a long time. I think he's 88 years of age. If I was him, I'd just retire. This is something that's becoming right now. The train is on the track. And there's no train wrecks because this is what's going on at the moment. Guys are stepping down. Al Franken, of course, he's stepping down. So it's a little bit different. These sex scandals, they've been there for a long time. Sex harassment there for a long time. But you didn't have, women didn't have that, you might say, the power or faith for retaliation. Some of these are things, but to get a special job in Hollywood. But it's just amazing to me that this has happened the way it's happening. And guys, again, they're stepping back from it. They say, I don't want to deal with it. It's too much, too costly. Guys end up selling their home, selling everything. And the wife is just sitting there, don't know what to do. The livelihood being taken from them. Matt Lahr, of course, that wouldn't be in the case. He makes $25 million. He's going to contract, I think, for $100 million, so he's in good shape. Like I said, these things are going to happen. This is just getting started. Women are coming forward now. They have credibility. They're more believable. But the biggest one of all is Donald Trump, our president. Why he's not stepping down? But 15 women accused him, and nobody, he just said they lied. All he got to say, they lied. When the rest of them said the same thing. He just said, they're lying, and it's over. We look at that, American people look at that. Like I said, they looked at slaves for 275 years. Didn't pay nobody. So they look at things, when they get bent on something, especially the European American, the Caucasian, when they get bent on something and they're making benefiting from it, they don't care how bad it is. They're going to still say yes. They know slavery was bad, but they would. Why are you going to cut some out? You're making money. If you're benefiting 100% from this. Then once you get rid of it, you add discrimination to it, segregation to it, Jim Crow to it. You add all these other things to it. Still doing the same thing, basically. Same thing. So, again, this is part of capitalism. You got to step on somebody, put your foot on somebody's neck. At all given times, regardless. This is the capitalism, this is the American way. This is what they took. This is the country they stole. Give our country back. They want it all back. They're going to oppress and they're going to suppress. And like I say, the only thing they got left now is try to do something with the voting. Gerrymandering things they're doing right now to make sure they get who they want to get elected in to follow suit of what they know it. The power and the rich. The power. They're not going to relinquish that power. They're not going to do that. They didn't do it in South Africa. They don't do it in Africa. They're not going to do it here. They're going to keep you in your place, whether we like it or not. They're going to throw some crumbs at you. They're going to not give you a pie. They're going to throw the crumbs and the crust at you. And all you're going to do is say thank you. You just got to, it's part of your survival kit. You have to have a survival kit. That's what most black Americans have. It's just a survival kit. That's all we got.
You are listening to Missing Pages of History. Discussing the whole issue of dealing with breaking news as it relates to the ongoing Russiagate, as well as the recent tax reform bill that was passed by both houses and this continuation of the sex scandals. We invite you and welcome you to join in today by calling in at 818-337-0016. When you call, please hit 1 and we will acknowledge your last 4 numbers. By the way, our theme for this program today is, do we need help? all this we are discussing in the context of, do we need help? When we say help, we're talking about underserved communities, as well as the realities that we're living in. Do we need help? If so, who will help and where will it come from? We'd like to hear your views and your perspectives. But what we're going to do right now, we're going to take a station break, and when we come back, we're going to share with you some upcoming things you need to know. And also we'll talk about our major theme today, which is the real cause of full incarceration, something that you really need to hear. So right now, we can pause for the station break. When we come back, our phone lines will be open. And remember, this is Missing Pages of History. We'll be back in two. welcome you back to Missing Pages of History. Today's theme is, do we need help? In that context, we've been talking to one of our contributors, historians, and analysts on various issues that are breaking news for this week. Right now, we'd like to continue this discussion and invite you, the audience, to feel free to call in at 818-337-0016 to share your views, your comments on these areas of discussion for today. Please hit 1 and we will acknowledge your last 4 numbers. Right now, we're going to our segment that we call Things You Need to Know. There are some things that's coming up right now that Missing Pages of History would like to alert our listening audience to in terms of something to watch out for. And some of the things are, 1, when we look at this whole question of homicide in Chicago, we are now seeing a decline in the homicide rate. Up to this point, there are reports that are stating that less than 20% of homicide rates are down as of right now in Chicago. Also recently, the killing of a policeman in Maryland, in Baltimore, Maryland, several weeks ago. He was shot in the head. There has been some information that has came out that is strongly looking at this particular killing. And one of the things it's showing is that there may be a possibility that there's a relationship between his death and making sure that he don't testify in an upcoming grand jury trial, which has many policemen on trial for corruption. He was to testify one day before he was killed on the grand jury. Also, we'd like to just inform our supporters and friends that Missing Pages of History upcoming raffle ticket fundraiser drawing has been extended to December the 9th. We will have a drawing on December the 9th at 1 p.m. at same place, same time. Please tune in next week for our upcoming quarterly raffle drawing. If you have not received or purchased your ticket, please do so. You may contact one of its members, or you can go to our website for more information and upcoming activities by going to www.mphinc.org. Please check out our website and come join us. Help us to build a strong community. So at this point in time, we'll go back to Emmanuel. Our phone lines are open. Emmanuel, just in terms of talking about some of the things people need to know, we talk about the decline of killings in Chicago. We talk about the possibility of some kind of intentional killing of the police officer as relates to the upcoming grand jury trial that's supposed to be coming up in Baltimore, where other policemen was on trial for various forms of corruption. Are there any comments you'd like to make in terms of some of the things people need to pay attention to?
Yeah, they should follow up on that a little bit because, again, they're trying to curb this or distort this in some type of way. I think with 8 police officers, they belong to, I think it's called the Elite Gun Trace Task Force in Baltimore. And there's a federal investigation on these guys on corruption. And this was the chief witness. I think his name was Souter. I think the young man's name was Souter, Fon Souter. I think he was 43 years of age and was the one to testify before a federal grand jury. I think it happened about a year ago and involved the Baltimore police officers. And the commissioner there, I think his name is Davis, Kervin Davis. He's really trying to say this happened when another person did this. It was a fight. It was a struggle. This type of thing with another, you know, with another person, and this is what happened, and he got shot in the head. Well. Like I say again, I said have him across the street from where he lived, something like that. You know, they called 911. They don't have it on private surveillance tape, anything of that, a video. So, like I say again, we got to look at that. And again, we should keep eyes and ears open with that, see what happens there. like I said, they have no evidence at the moment that he was killed by another police officer, this or that. They're trying to put it, you know, just a person, community did this, and they got into, you know, got into a little scramble or something. But again, they're trying to hide a shooting again, and they're trying to put it on the community to a certain extent. And like I said again, I think it was a hit. I think it was a hit myself because of, you know, what he was going to testify against these eight police officers and, again, for corruption. So, but, again, on the homicide in Chicago, I think he had killed at this same time last year about 730 people. I think this year it's 630-some-odd people, so about 100 less or more. So that's fantastic in Chicago. So some things are working there. I think the outreach programs, people are getting involved, communities are getting involved, and that's happening there. So I think that's a positive.
You know, Emmanuel, there's one other issue I'd like to just raise with our listening audience to pay attention to and maybe to join into the struggle. There is an ongoing battle with the Department of Homeland Security to extend temporary protective status for Haitian immigrants. And now it looks like the Trump administration has until May the 23rd to make a decision on extending the TPS for Haitians or allowing it to expire on July 22nd, which would mean possible deportation for the current number of about 58,000 Haitians in this country, possibly maybe deported back to Haiti. I think that's the issue of concern people need to take a look at. Be concerned about, and those are just some of the things you need to know and pay attention to. At this point in time, let's Emmanuel, let's go to our major theme tonight. We're talking about, do we need help? Now, callers, those who've been listening, if you want to make any comments, please make sure you hit one, and we'll acknowledge your last 4 minutes. Emmanuel, you know, many times when we talk about incarceration, they really don't tell us the whole full story. I remember reading a report, and it never dawned on me, that the more you incarcerate people, the more you encourage more incarceration. It creates a condition for more incarceration. And definitely that is real sophisticated in terms of how people can make like something sound real good about we need to lock up these people because they're doing bad things. But at the same time, there are other motives that constantly encourages that because we know there's a money-making machine when you lock people up. So, Emmanuel, I want you to just talk a little bit about this whole concept of the real cause of food incarceration, what that really entails, and how does it really, really impact our communities?
Well, first of all, incarceration, the cost is very alarming. It runs into base around about $1 trillion. And when we're talking about incarceration, there's just so many tentacles to it. Incarceration entails a lot of things. The economic toll of mass incarceration, you know, it exceeds $1 trillion per year. And half of that $1 trillion, it falls on the burdens of families, children, communities that who have been locked up. Now, let's take this, let's look at this thing. The United States is the biggest jailer on the planet. We consist of about 5% of the population, but we locking up people at about 25% of the population. So let's look at that. We consist of 5% of the world's population, but 25% of the prisoners are in the United States. Who are they? Who are they? They're locking up. Almost 70% of African Americans, or you might say people of color. And this includes another 7 million now, probation, are on parole. And operating these federal and state prisons costs a lot of money. and local jails. You're talking about three areas that these prisons are in, the operating costs. And we're not talking about the cost of court getting transported back and forth to court. We're not talking about hospital costs. All these costs entails. We're talking about judges, lawyers, we're talking about all this stuff is involved. It costs a lot of money on taxpayers and for families also. But as I look at this, what's some of the price tag on certain things? What is the social cost of incarceration? Runs about $80 billion. The social cost. What I'm saying that is that people business you in prison, business you in jail, bring you things, credit cards, all of this. Well, we're talking about the vendors making plenty of money. The vendors are who's in the jail, who supplies these three areas, the jail, the state, federal place of housing. What kind of money that they making out of this? From the communications, furniture, this is, and what's the labor cost coming out of there? I mean, look at this is crazy. But again, it's not so much locking people up, it's extended stay. You're locking people up for citizen of television, getting them 15 and 20 years. For a television? This is kind of this crazy stuff. Breaking in someone's home, stealing $700 worth of goods, and get a young kid that's got 17 years. I think the estimated total of what he stole was $700. He got this 17-year-old kid got 17 years. This is crazy. But this is what we call, again, it's making money. But at the same time, $1 trillion, of course, it drops the operating cost of the United States government at $350 billion per month. It has effect on children, families, and everything else. But look at the evidence I bring from this. After people leave prison, what happens? You're talking about $7 billion in wages is probably lost. Probably part of the workforce. The job they're going to get from incarceration, it costs them the job they would have had, a job they lost, costs about $230 billion. That's the job they had prior than going to prison. Now they're coming out now going to make less money or no job or return to prison. 80% returns back to prison. 80%. So like I said, it's a business, a turnstile business. It's good for capitalism again. But again, we're talking about, people are going to earn lower wages because they face occupational restrictions. There's nothing like facing occupational restrictions. You're going to encounter discrimination in the hiring process. These two things are definitely going to happen. And you're going to have a weaker social network and less human capital due to their incarceration. So, and that's something decimal probably that you guys probably don't know, the listeners don't know, that the mortality rate is 3.5 times higher than of people who have never been incarcerated. They have a shortened lifespan. What this ad kind of costs is this, about $63 billion. They don't live as long. Stress hits them big time. Sickness, everything, because they've been incarcerated. The high level of incarceration, it increases crime because he can't get a job, a thing I just mentioned to you earlier, and don't deter it by doing this. They got to rob somebody because they have no money. They're going to knock somebody in the head. They're going to rob something and go back to prison again. And this is what we're talking about. And not don't deter anything. So what we got to do is probably enforce behavior and survival strategies. And we got to get more adapted outside the prison environment. Because once you go to prison and come out, the environment totally changes toward the human. But again, you just weaken the social controls of people and then bind neighborhoods together. Once a person goes to jail, he comes back out, they give a party, do this and that. But that's just the environment he's in at a particular moment. All you're going to do is, like I say, it's not going to deter anything because he has to have money. He got to have some resources. And, you know, I'm going to sort of switch gears and I'm going to talk about the children of the incarcerated people. What kind of cost we talk about there? The children of the prisoner, they're 5 times likely more to go to the prison than their peers. This is 5 times. Because your parents are not there. Your father's locked up. You got to meet this every day in your conversation. Where's your mother? Where's your father? They're locked up. 5 times you going to jail, you got to do something. They're going to be stigmatized. And they suffer long-term emotional and behavior challenges. This is what your children have to put up with. And they have a greater chance of living in poverty or general instability at home and becoming homeless themselves. This is what the this is what it does. These are the components of being incarcerated. Talking about the cost, but also we're talking about, again, the enormous emotional things that happen to your children. I'll give you another number that's going to blow your mind. 10% of the children that are incarcerated, their parents are incarcerated, they don't finish high school. They drop out because, again, they don't go to finish high school or attend college because, again, incarcerated parents. And, again, the labor force is, again, objected to cheap labor. They got to make up the lost income for the family. The young man drops out of school, drops out of college, he's going. And, of course, the divorce rate is that triples, too. So this is something we got to look at. Again, how much is that, the cost of that? About $185 billion. If you add all the numbers I've given you up, it's come to about $1 trillion. This is per year. This is the economic burden of mass incarceration in the United States. And again, this comprises about 6% of the GNP, our gross national product. So incarceration, again, has its minuses, and of course it has its pluses for capitalism.
All right, Manny, we're going to take a pause for a second. We have some callers who've been waiting patiently. We're going to take our first caller. Caller, welcome to Missing Patriot History. Caller, your last four numbers are 6029. 6029, welcome to MPH.
Question. Well, thanks for taking my call. The question in terms of incarceration, I think one of the things that one of the things your guest alluded to, you talked about the role of capitalism in terms of facilitating, mass incarceration. I think it's more insidious nature that we have to begin to understand clearly, and also from a historical perspective. And that is, when we look in terms of mass incarceration, then we have to understand what's driving mass incarceration. Clearly, in a society which says it can't afford to house its people, shelter its people, or to educate its people, to provide employment for its people. Clearly, in such a scenario, then the only recourse for the government maintaining stability or longevity is to incarcerate folks. And the question is this: when we look at it in terms of mass incarceration, and we look at it in terms of the negative effects affiliated with expenditures, we spend lots of money in terms of prisons. Does that money that's doing this society large any good? But nonetheless, you're spending these trillions of dollars a year in terms of incarcerating people. But the problem is the underlying social conditions. When we talk about more and more people don't have jobs, more and more people have homeless, more and more people lack quality education. When you talk about proliferation of these social factors, the question for the government is how do I maintain my longevity, my stability, given the fact that increasingly more and more people are creating a real problem in terms of, you know, their needs and the system's inability to provide for their needs, whether it be housing, shelter, education, food, or whatever it may be. So the more insidious question is, what is the government response to the fact that obviously incarceration is not going to solve the problems that people are confronting with in society? And we talk about expenditures, that clearly the government cannot afford to keep spending this kind of money in terms of mass incarceration, given all other things going on, like tax cuts for wealthy, for corporations, the austerity where you victimize poor people and tax them increasingly at higher rates, while the wealthy pay relatively little in terms of income. So it means that the economy, as the government understands it, means it has fewer and fewer revenues, which means there's a problem. So the same token, you have fewer and fewer revenues, you got more and more social ills in terms of problems that people are facing. The question is this: what is the government going to do, given the realities that when we talk about unemployment, homelessness, lack of education, lack of shelter, lack of employment, when we talk about all these factors, these things are going to proliferate. They're not going to decrease because we're talking about capitalism. So the question is, what is the government going to do? Well, my position is the government can only do one thing, and do one or two things. It can devise an ingenious method in terms of, you know, liquidating people, you know, with creating conditions where people are self-destruct, where people kill themselves simply out of frustration, anger, hopelessness. Or it can incarcerate large numbers of citizenry in a manner in which is relatively free for the government. In that sense, they can incarcerate people at a single place without concern to their human rights, but simply warehousing them in a particular place, not providing any health care, not to monitor them other than to keep them inside the enclosure. But it's, in terms of the government, it's a very, very useful thing because there's no expenditures that are needed, or just warehouse large number of people in a certain space and confine them in that space. Particularly when you call these people enemy combatants, or you call these people enemies of the state, or whatever you call them, that you wash your hand, the government washes your hand of any responsibility in terms of providing those people in interns. So I think we got to be very concerned in terms of long-term perspective, in terms of the propensity of this government to do something that's so outrageous, something so inhuman, something that is so outrageous, you know, that it should shock the human consciousness. So I'm very concerned that given the lack of consciousness in the society, that ultimately the only real option for this government is to lock up large number of people and turn large number of people. And so we talk about the National Defense Authorization Act, and we talked about this notion in terms of mass incarceration of a large number of African people. They clearly, they see this as a viable option. And I think we've got to take it very seriously and understand that given the ethos of capitalism, they're locking up large number of people and throwing away the key, it's nothing unusual for such a capitalist mindset. So they may be very concerned about mass incarceration of American people in the society. And I want to thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, caller, for your comments. Let's take the next caller before we let you respond, Emmanuel. We're going to bring in that caller 9289. We're going to bring in that caller 9289. Caller, no question or comments for today's program.
Okay.
9289.
I'd just like to make a comment as far as the tax is concerned. Even though they said, even though they said that this is the final, doesn't it still have to go to a committee that has to take between what the Senate and the House both had and go through and make adjustments or whatever? So is it really a final bill as far as the taxes? I don't understand it because I would have thought that we would have heard from the both where they would have went through and made adjustments, but apparently they didn't because of last night they tried to add additions and everything that a lot of congressmen and senators or whatever weren't aware of. So if we could have Mr. Joyner just to address that for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Carla. Okay, we'll go back to our analyst, the historian, and contributor, Emmanuel. You heard the two comments right there, your response to the first comment, and then you can address the second one, if any.
Yeah, I'll just the second one first. There's going to be a conference on that, but actually it was done at night So you couldn't protest, could do a lot of things. They got to iron out a lot of things are handwritten, so they got to read, do the handwritten sort of explain a little bit more. But they're going to be what they call a conference. And after this conference, after they go through fine tooth comb, then they go to the president's desk for his signature. So it's not quite, like I said, it's got to be refined a little bit because a lot of handwritten stuff came in because adjustments and other things came at the end. And some of the, Republicans, no Democrat vote for this at all. We know it's a horrific, you know, we know it's bad. And it's bad again. It's going to, you got to get the money from somewhere. And like I said, the money got to come from the main three places where money's at. Money's at those three places. It's Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. That's where the money is. That's where they're going to get it from. They're going to go over the entitlement programs. This is what they do. So I hope I answered her question there. It's not the final. They got to fine tooth comb it first. Once they do that, they got to put it to a print stage. A lot of stuff is handwritten. Cannot go that way. So they're going to do that first. And once that gets done, then go to the final stage. I go to the president's desk for a signature. To the first caller about incarceration, the number's where it need to be. They're going to keep it at a certain number because, again, this is just at a probability stage. And they want to keep it there. We call it status quo. We're talking about 7 million people, over 320 million. So what are you talking about? You're talking about, what we're less than 1%. But it's making billions of dollars. They really don't care. Because you got to build prisons, you got to build jails, you got to build courthouses, refurbished courthouse, all these things. This is all profitable. Like I said, there's basically three things that holds up capitalism. And one of them is, it's your prison intake. That holds up everything. Prison system creates about 45 million jobs. You count judges, lawyers, prosecutors, people work at the courthouses, you talk about correctional officers, you're talking about a whole bunch of people, a lot of jobs. So this is going to stay like that. This is going to stay just like the way it is. They're going to make prisoners and their families pay more. They're going to make them pay for certain things. They're going to sell things inside the prison. People are not getting money like they used to get. You get out of prison, you got so much money at 35 cents an hour, that ain't happening no more. Taxes on that, things you're going to do. So it's going to be self-sustainable. They got, I think, free research teams are doing that now, how to keep stabilized in prison the way they are. And again, that the government's got to put so much money out there. But like I say, this is going to be like the status quo. It's going to stay like it is. It ain't going nowhere. They have a number. They got to keep that number where it is. Because, again, the private prisoners, if no one is in that cell, the taxpayers, they pay for that cell being empty. And that's a lot of money. If nobody in that cell for 24 hours, they got to put somebody to make them pay some type of way, to make the state and federal government pay for that, opposed to the taxpayer itself. Either way you look at it, it still comes from the taxpayer.
Emmanuel, when one look at this reality of this war on incarceration, can one truly come to a conclusion that this war on incarceration is another form of a modern-day slavery, the 21st century slavery?
Well, not quite, but you can look at it and see who's in there. I mean, who are they locking up? Who are they giving time to? Just for instance, for a number of sake, when a Caucasian or European did the same crime as a black person gets 7.5 years longer because of the labor. They're making furniture. They're making all type of uniforms, police uniforms. They're making fireman uniforms, all this stuff they're making in prison now. At some places, as low as 24 cents an hour. When you get out of prison, you don't have no money. You have child support or you had to pay taxes. They're going to dig up everything they can not to give you no money. They're going to appeal most suitcases. They're going to appeal most of those. So there's nothing there. Did they ever think? There are 26 think tanks. 26 think tanks studying black America. We have none studying white America.
All right, on that note, let's take our final caller for the night. And when we come back, Emmanuel, we'll ask for you to do your closing summary. And you address the question, do we need help? What does that entail? We'll take caller number 4298. Caller number 4298, welcome to Missing Pages. Your comment or question for today's program.
Thank you, thank you. I really didn't have a question. I just noticed that there's also some environmental concerns within this tax cut packet, maybe hidden some wilderness areas, more or less national preserve park. It's mostly on Native American land, and they're trying to open it up to oil drilling and the private property people. And I'm just a little concerned about that. But right now, I have no questions. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment, Carl. Emmanuel, like always, when they make these bills, they always hide other things under these bills. The caller alludes to the possibility we also need to look at this whole question of environmental concerns. What they're going to do to the environment.
When the program, they're going to be cut from that program, yes. There's 400 some odd pages of the tax bill. 400 pages contain a lot of education. It contains food stamps, vouchers. This involves almost, they're going to get a little bit from everywhere. Entitlement programs. They're going to be getting a little bit from in entitlement programs. And they're going to be, might be as many as 120 programs they're going to be getting money from. From food stamp programs, all different type of programs out there, educational programs, this is what they're coming at. Because you got to make this money up. We spend $350 billion per month. We got to make sure we, and this don't include disasters, fires and hurricanes and floods. Don't include none of that. This is just basic. Above, like I said, we take care of the world when they have disasters. We help people out all over. They don't include none of that. $350 billion, this is your regular bills. It's like your water bill, light bill, your mortgage, talking about luxury items or food or this or that, or you have a car accident or something. We're not talking about that. To keep the America functioning, $350 billion per month, that's a lot of money. And African America, we're only 7% of that. So we ain't getting the money. We're going to get 7% of that, of $350 billion. So we get nothing. We're getting peanuts.
Emmanuel, we are going over a few minutes of our program. We would like to bring it to a closing with your statement in terms of where are you at? Do we need help when we look at underserved communities and what's going on today? Your final thoughts for today's program.
We need a lot of help. I was talking about it, you know, the plight of incarceration. But families and communities, it's hard to estimate the true cost of incarceration. But this is important to us all, that we need help. But like I said, it's grossly underestimated. And again, the level of incarceration, which is normal to me, which is beyond, beyond socially optimal. So again, we need help. More organizing, more programs like this to talk about facts opposed to fiction. And they put numbers on us, and we have to challenge them with numbers, not rhetoric. Rhetoric don't win anything. Numbers win. When you don't spend your money, Christmas, they understand that one. If you go spend, they understand it. Again, they're going to say they lost money. And you can't even move down the highway. You can't get in a store because it's a lying country. Capitalism has to have a lot of lies to keep it stable, to make it a success. They have to lie a lot, and it's what they do. Again, it's about the have and the have-nots. And believe me, that 1% runs all of this, whether we like it or not. They're going to run more because the tax benefit, basically, it benefited the corporate world. And it's not going to trickle down. There's no such thing as trickle-down economics. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work at all. We just lie, lie, lie. And we got to start pointing the lies out. We're educated enough to do this. But again, we need think tanks. We need think tanks, organizations. We need money. Think tanks are not, they have no success if you have money with them. That's my final thought for today.
We'd like to thank you, Emmanuel, for your contribution to today's program and the major theme, Do We Need Help? And we'd like to share with our listening audience to remind you that Missing Pages of History comes on every Saturday on a biweekly basis. Our next program will be December 16th. But we will have a special program next Saturday, December the 9th, as we'll do our quarterly raffle drawing at 1 p.m. So please tune in next week at 1 p.m. as we do our raffle drawing and join us completely on the 16th as we do our biweekly program. Also, we'd like to remind you, you can learn more about Missing Pages of History by going to our website, which is www.mphinc.org. That's www.mphinc.org. Support our quarterly raffle fundraisers. One of the things we'll be doing with our resources is we'll be providing dinners for those who may be unfortunate for December. We're collecting clothes, shoes, et cetera, for their youth. And we're going to be doing a lot of other social services programs. So please support us. If you have any questions or comments, you can always email us at missingpagesofhistory1@yahoo.com. missingpagesofhistory1@yahoo.com. Until next time, let's continue to work together and continue to fill in our missing pages of history.
Tennessee. Tennessee.
Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing ground. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone. I never at once felt so alone. I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire. But Lord, I ask you to be my guiding force and truth. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee.
A game of horseshoes.
Now I see the importance of history. While my people be in the mess that they be. Many journeys to freedom made in vain. My brothers on the corner playing ghetto games. I ask you, Lord, why you enlighten me without the enlightenment of all my folks. You said, cause I set myself on a quest for truth. And you was there to quench my thirst. But I am still thirsty. Lord, allow me to drink some more. He said, what I am searching for are the answers to all which are in front of me. The ultimate truth started to get blurred. some strange reason it had to be. It was all a dream about Tennessee.
Tennessee.